We're glad you're joining us here at Common Thread Online. This is a recording of our community gathering, as we do each week, to think together about the spiritual journey. At the end of the lesson, we open the floor for discussion. We'd love to hear what you're thinking, too. Go to our community's Facebook page, post your thoughts. 3,000 listening meetings, you've heard. Our 40 congregations and nonprofits distilled out three issues that we could work on together: housing, jobs, and schools. And now, our clergy team, they're going to meet with all of our county-level candidates for the upcoming election and ask for commitments in these three areas. And our ability to ask is going to depend upon our demonstrated ability to mobilize people. So each of our institutions is first registering all of our own members to vote and committing to come and vote. Second, we will be asking each other to ask five others to register and vote. We don't care how people vote, just that they do. We're demonstrating our capacity to organize people so that we can get commitments in our three areas of concern, places that cause pain for people living in Wake County. Consequently, 15 Common Thread folks will be contacting each of us in the community, so you can expect text, and that text will invite you to set up a call, and I think it's going to be fun. I'm already registered to vote, but I'm looking forward to the call anyway. I want to encourage whoever calls me, tell them to keep up the good work, but also to think about who my five will be. Well, this is the kind of systems work we've been talking about: service work, systems work, spirituality work. So if you've got any questions about it, you can ask Angie Scioli. Her contact information is in the directory. And Angie, if you haven't, put it up on the Facebook group as well. Well, also going on with One Wake, in order to help us make good asks of our candidates, we've been studying housing. And we've been studying what's going on in our county so that we know and we can analyze what can be done and how it can be done so that we can get good commitments. So the group that formed the housing group has done a lot of good work already, and they're just about now, Katie was telling me, ready for team members. So I hope some of us will become, I guess, committee members. You can find out what that means by Zooming in tomorrow, Monday, August 3rd, at 7 p.m. The Zoom registration, it just posted on our Facebook group and on our public page. It's also on our website. So again, I hope folks in our community will do this, because racial inequity and this eviction tidal wave that's happening, these are great, big, overwhelming national issues. But here's something that we can actually do about it, right here, right now, right here at home. So I hope you'll participate in that. Okay, let's begin our lesson, Becoming People of Our Time. Two stories today, and the beginning of an answer to a question that Jeff Murrell asked on the live stream comments last week. First, the story. A woman in our community was feeling a lot of tumult at work. She'd had an unfair demotion, and her boss was behaving badly, and there were trust issues, maybe even legal issues. Certainly there were respect issues going on, and it was all very real. And as she's churning away on these things, she has a moment of seeing, noticing. We've been talking about that. What triggered it was very simple, really. Somebody said to her in passing, "You know, you're pretty invested in work." But she, having eyes that see, ears that hear, heard behind the words. Something resonated deeply within her, something that came and said, pay attention to that. She's been doing the spirituality work that we've been talking about, so she was ready when the moment came. And so she stepped outside of the script that she carries in her head, her thinking habits, the routines that run her days, and said to herself, I guess I am pretty emotionally invested in work. She went further and said, "No, why do you suppose? Why do you suppose it is that way?" Look at that. Look at how much of my personal value I put on how I'm doing at work. And it's not just how I do, she said, but it's more than that. It's how people tell me I'm doing at work. So it's not just that I have to show up and do good work, it's that I have to be seen doing good work. And, she continued, look at all the pressure that I carry inside to make sure that my work gets seen. I am always doing more. I am always going above and beyond. Always. And look at that too. If I don't get seen, after doing all of these things that I do to get seen, if I don't get seen, look how bothered I get. Look how I churn away, even after I leave work. Ah, look at that. Seeing. And she continued, I wonder, how could I be, even in the middle of this unfair situation, how could I be if I could have that bandwidth back? I wonder what I'd be bringing to this moment right now if I didn't have to pay the toll that I pay every day, tying my personal worth to how I am seen at work. Well, that's the spirituality work that we talk about all the time when we talk about service work, systems work, and spirituality work. It's the work of standing outside of our internalized, habituated scripts, seeing our thinking patterns, seeing our feeling routines, standing far enough outside of them to begin choosing or not choosing whether we're going to let them run us and our days. Now, she didn't say this, but given how our brains work, I'm pretty sure it's true, that the bandwidth that she was burning during this most recent episode, this wasn't the first time she'd ever done that. As we've been saying, we always think thoughts that we've thought before. We feel feelings that we've felt before because our brains are wired for habit, for routines. So, the energy that she saw herself spending to feed her be-seen habit, she'd been spending that energy for a long time. It had been sucking up system resources for a long time. It's been taking up the energy that she might have preferred to go elsewhere in her life if she had seen it. We all do that. We all say a lot of yeses to service our thinking and our feeling habits. Consequently, because we do, we have to say a lot of no's to make room for all of those yeses. And those no's will direct our energy and our mind space and our time and our money, our very view of reality. All of those resources get siphoned off by our unseen thinking habits. And when that happens, our resources don't go where wisdom would advise us to apply them. And this whole process, it's all very tenacious. We are fiercely committed to our unseen routines. We do practice long, sustained effort in the same direction. But often that direction over time diminishes us, drains us, reduces what we have left over to build healthy lives and healthy homes and healthy schools and neighborhoods and to engage the most important moral issue of our day. We want our tenacity to be taking us toward the lives we want. We want our tenacity to be carrying us toward the world that we want to live in. And so the question that we're asking in this lesson is, where does that kind of tenacity come from? Here's another way we could be asking the question. How do we get our tenacity to strengthen us, not weaken us? How do we get our tenacity to build capacity inside of ourselves, not burn our candles at both ends? How do we get our tenacity to strengthen the relationships that we value most and not slowly wear them down over time? How do we build the kind of tenacity that will afford us the bandwidth that we need when a historical moment invites us to change history? So that we have the vision and that we have the internal resources to respond to the moment. That's what's at stake when we take up the challenge of pointing our tenacity, pointing our routines in a direction that we most deeply want to go. Well, I review that in order to point out what's at stake, because it's big. What's at stake? It's your life. It's your home. It's your world. Routines are by nature routine. Habits by nature habitual. Consequently, changing the neural connections and redirecting our default thoughts and our default feelings and our default words and deeds, weakening those neural connections and at the same time strengthening the ones that will take us where we want to go, it is hard work. And no one among us undertakes hard work without good reason to do so. So here's the reason. Thought habits become emotional response habits. And emotional response habits become word and deed habits. And those words and deeds become habits of their own. And they eventually create the only life that we are ever going to get. How we live and how we love and what we bring to the world that we help create every day, it is all determined by habits, routines, and where we point our tenacity. So, again, in the live stream notes last week, Jeff Murrell brought up an important question. So, yeah, Doug, noticing. You got to see the unconscious routine before you can do anything about it. Yeah, I get that. But here's my problem. I see my routines, and I could easily get stuck just seeing my routines. But how do I actually do something different from my routines? How do we go about changing our routines? How do we direct where our tenacity goes? It's a really good question. Well, be heading in the direction that Chris Gravy also mentioned there in the comments last week, that it's very hard to overestimate the disruptive power of noticing. He actually suggested a couple of books if you didn't see those, you should check them out. Every book I've ever read that Chris suggested, it was a good one. So let's come at Jeff's question in a roundabout way. Let me tell the second story. Now, I'm going to tell this story with a whole lot of interpretive lens added into the mix. I think you'll see me doing it. Christy told me a little story, and I've made it a big story full of all kinds of application. So I wrote Christy Phillips this week to get an illustration for today's lesson. Christy organizes our self-awareness workshops, so she does a lot of worksheets with people. So I asked her for some worksheet pattern that I could use as an illustration today, so something she'd seen recently. And she responded and said, sure, I'll give you one of my own patterns. It goes like this. When I take care of myself, she said, my unseen scripts tells me this, that other people will suffer, especially the people I love, other people will suffer if I take care of myself. Take care of myself and my people suffer. It's an inner, unseen thinking habit, and it tells me that my role on the earth is to make sure that everybody else's life works. Consequently, self-care, it actually gets in the way of my life purpose. Consequently, it's hard for me to set firm boundaries. It's hard for me to practice self-care. It just never comes to mind. But, she said, let's be real. Nobody can really neglect self-care. Nobody can really not set boundaries. So what ends up happening is when I do have a need, I don't have the tools to take care of them, so I revert to workarounds. And some of my workarounds are pretty tenacious. Here's one of them, she said. I do victimhood. Now, I don't call it that. I call it noble. I call it sacrifice, which is so much prettier. But what it doesn't do is it doesn't meet my very real needs. But she said, once I trigger the victim or nobility thought habit, sure enough, that chain of thoughts starts right up. And next in line come the emotion habits and the word habits. These are backdoor ways for me to get my needs met without having to actually ask for them. So first in line, she said, I get up ahead of steam by stewing in self-pity. I feel undervalued. I feel uncared for. And after I do enough of that stewing, I work up the energy that I need to say some words. And sure enough, they are passive-aggressive words. They are manipulative words. Ways that I can get what I need without actually asking for them. And I've done it a long time now, she said, so it's become habit, and I am pretty tenacious about it. which, she said, as you can imagine, that does not go well. The pattern has been the source of a lot of pain in my life, been the source of a lot of pain for the people that I love. So here I am telling myself a story about making noble sacrifice on behalf of the people I love. And then this tenacity that I carry around actually creates suffering, not just for me, but for those very people. Damn. That's the way Paul would have said it. He said, who's going to deliver me from this inner death? Well, if you've got a caregiving personality like Christy does, you've probably seen some version of this pattern in your own life. But if not, you've got a pattern of your own. And by the way, if you haven't been to our Enneagram seminar, or even if you have, it'd be worth a refresher. We're figuring out how we're going to do it online this year. It's going to be Saturday, September 12th. I don't know what the cost will be this year because there isn't going to be lunch because we won't be together, so I don't know what it will be yet, but we'll figure that out and let you know. If you do go, you're going to learn a lot about the thought habits and the emotion habits that drive you given your unique personality. So here's why Christy's story helps us answer Jeff's question. Here's the reason. It's because she was the one who was telling it. She was the one who was standing far enough outside of her own tenacity to see it and to see it working on her. And she has. She's been studying the Enneagram. She's been doing the self-awareness worksheets. She's been doing the spirituality, the work of noticing. And consequently, she was able to both see her story and to be able to tell her story. She could stand far enough outside of those deeply ingrained habits to begin to see them and question them. Now, here's what she could have done. She could have done what many people do. She could have focused on changing her passive-aggressive words habit. I bet, she didn't say this, but I bet somebody along the way has kindly suggested to her that she ought to do that. She could have focused on the passive-aggressive word habit. Or she has probably seen her victimhood habit and thought that's a bad thing, and she could have worked on changing that. Or she could have worked on changing her manipulative words habit. But had she done that, she probably would have had limited success because she would have been focusing on the thing, and she would have missed the thing under the thing. But instead, she focused on unearthing the story that she tells herself, the story that actually drives her passive-aggressive thoughts, that drives her victimhood thoughts, that drives her manipulation. Huh, look at that. Some part of me really believes that if I take care of myself, if I set healthy boundaries, that my people are going to suffer. If you were following the comments in last stream's live stream, you would have seen Teresa reference Byron Katie's core questions. They are really helpful questions. We actually integrated them into a version of our last update to the self-awareness worksheet. Once we do the work of standing outside and seeing our thought habits, seeing our emotion habits, seeing those routines that run us, when we do the work of standing outside and seeing them, then we can actually begin to question them. We can ask the question, is that story true? I mean, really, really true? Does the earth really tilt on its axis and harm the people I love if I say no or if I take care of myself? Is that really true? If I look at it from this angle, it sure has seemed true. But what if I also looked at it from that angle? Is it true when I look at it from over there? So I ask myself, we ask ourselves the question, is it always true or is this just sometimes true? Is it true in this way and that way or is it really just true this way? Here's another way to look at it. What if my kids believed that that was true? What if they believed that if they took care of themselves, other people would suffer? Would I, seeing them think that, seeing them believe that, would I think that it was true for them? Probably not. Consequently, is it really, really true for me? And the questions go, how does believing that it's true, 100% always true, unconscious, unseen, true, how does that impact the life that I live every day? What do I do or what do I leave undone because I believe this thing is true? What are the consequences of this thought routine? What are the consequences of this emotional response routine? What is this version of tenacity costing me? What is this version of tenacity costing the people that I love? And how would I live differently if I didn't believe this? Let me take a moment and imagine a world and imagine myself in that world in which I was not being dictated to by the tyranny of my thought habits, the tyranny of my emotional response routines. Four questions. If you don't remember the questions, no worries. I put links to the Doing the Worksheet page on our website and the Enneagram page on our website. You can read a whole bunch there. It's in the live stream post. Well, here's the thing. That process that I just described Christy going through is a big, big part of how we answer Jeff's question. Seeing what's driving our thoughts and seeing what's driving our feelings and our words and our deeds, seeing the thing under the thing, this allows us to question the thing under the thing and to evaluate it, to question it and to tell the thing, to talk it over with spiritual friends, and in the process to poke at it, to suspect it, and to do that along with other people. Do that, and it will weaken the hold that the thing under the thing has over us. When we look at the thing under the thing, and when we question it, and when we talk about it with spiritual friends, we are treating it as though it is a non-me reality. A non-me reality. When we think thoughts about our thoughts, just doing that weakens the hold that those thoughts have over us. When we stand outside of our deep routines and describe them to other people, some deep part of us realizes, oh, that's not me. It's just a thing I do. I am not my thoughts. I'm not my words. I'm not my deeds. I'm not my emotional patterns. They're habit. They are routines, and they are pretty tenacious, but they are not me. Now, before we are armed with that very profound realization, it's really difficult to answer Jeff's question, in no small part, because before we see the thing under the thing, all of our energies don't go to the thing under the thing. They just go to the thing. Our energies get focused on the leaf and not the root. Our energies get focused on the result and not the cause. Before seeing, we play a game of psychological and emotional whack-a-mole. We chase one tenacious thing after another tenacious thing. So we whack my victimhood mindset. We whack our passive-aggressive mindset. We whack our manipulation habit. And the game goes on and on and on until we see what we need to whack. Well, that's not the end of the story. After Christy told me about the pattern, we kept talking back and forth. And for the rest of the conversation, here's what she did. She told me about healthy boundaries that she has been setting. We talk about healthy practices of self-care that she has implemented in her life. We talked about how it feels awkward sometimes, it feels unnatural sometimes, but she's doing it. And the funny thing, the world has not tilted on its axis, and her people have not been damaged. I get ready for this part, Jeff, because it really goes to your question. Now, each time that she ventured out to set one of those boundaries, it took a lot of focus and a lot of attention because it wasn't second nature. It felt unnatural to her because it was so brand new. It's like when we use our offhand to try and write our names. It feels awkward, uncomfortable. But having seen her story, she knew it was important enough to muster all that awkwardness and do it anyway. So she would set a boundary. She would practice self-care. And then she would do it again and again and again. And sometimes she would set the boundary out too far. Other times she would not set it out far enough because that's how we learn and that's how we develop new neural pathways. But for a long time now, I've been watching Christy point her tenacity in a direction that will take her life where she wants it to go. Changing the things by going after the thing under the thing. Now, of course, for her, as it is for everybody, the change has been incremental. That's just how this goes. Slowly weakening the power of one habit and slowly strengthening the power of another habit happens incrementally, one episode at a time. Now, that's work that we can do and work that we can talk about with our spiritual friends while we are doing it once we know the work we actually need to do. Now, I tell Christy's story today because I texted her this week and because she gave me permission. But I could tell that same story for many, many people in our community who have been doing the spirituality work, who've been dismantling our unconscious tenacity and remantling some version of tenacity that is taking us where we want our lives to go. Two stories today, personal stories about building routines in our personal lives by seeing the story we tell ourselves in our personal lives. We can build tenacity in a very personal way and at a very personal level. That's very important. But the principle is bigger than our personal lives. Our focus this summer has been on becoming people of our time, and in our time, the most important moral issue of our day is dismantling the long entrenched systems that have existed in our towns and in our cities and in our nation that have caused racial harm generation after generation after generation. But here's the thing. Those systems that produce those unjust outcomes, they are also caused by unconscious, unseen, collectively shared thought habits, thought routines, feeling and speaking and acting routines. Routines in the way that we do business, the way that we do health and housing and education. And to sustain the work of disrupting this system's status quo, that also begins with the spirituality work of seeing the thing under the thing. The ability to sustain long effort in the same direction begins there. We talk about work in the circle all the time. We're about to produce a document that'll tell you how you can work in each one of the four quadrants. It's coming out in the next week or two. And over in the learning quadrant, one of the things that we do is we get our brains to think new thought routines when we learn. So if you haven't read one of the books that we've been suggesting about racial equity lately, or any of, I was really glad to see this, several books that are on the New York Times bestseller list right now, some book that will explore the thing under racial inequity, please pick one up, because the learning practices is one of the ways that we see, and seeing is where we start. And again, as I mentioned, on Saturday, September 12th, we'll have our annual Enneagram seminar. We'll form groups that will meet three times a month through May. And on Saturday, October 3rd, we'll have our self-awareness workshops. We'll form practice groups that will run 6 weeks. You'll know how to do the worksheet after that. The details for both are on the website now. I encourage you to check them out. These are things that we can begin to do to work on these massively overwhelming feeling issues that define our days. It's how we become people of our time. And so, indwelling divine, may we be tenacious people with the kind of tenacity that takes us toward lives we want to live and the world that we want to live in. Amen. Well, if you would, please prepare your tithes and offerings. What that has come to mean is that if you get to keep your job during this time, on the donate button on our website, or it's also there's also a link in our in the live stream post. If you get to keep your job, community, spiritual community, is a great place to invest. The return on investment that we put in, that we get back when we invest our time and our energy and our dollars and our love, that return on investment is a very good deal. So if you get to keep your job, it takes dollars to keep a spiritual community financially healthy, so please contribute there. And that being said, we've got some minutes left. Gene, what are folks thinking about? What's stirring up in their hearts?
So the first comment comes from Maria, sitting right over here.
Hey, look at Maria.
And Maria said, part of the issue is that the long-sustained effort, if you will, in quotes, doesn't feel like effort because it's almost always happening automatically in the background.
Yeah. So one of the objections that I get regularly is, hey, Doug, you keep saying here now, small, doable. And what here now, small, doable is sounds like is, oh, you don't have to put very much effort into it. And that isn't what here now, small, doable is about at all. Here now, small, doable is about the capacity to sustain effort over a long period of time. And if we begin to think wisely, remember we've been talking in the lesson about considered routines, carefully considered routines. If we build routines that build the homes that we want, but also the racially just world that we want, and we build those routines in and we begin to practice them over long period of time, they do become habituated. And you probably did not notice this morning when you brushed your teeth. Actually, you're sitting at home. You're probably still in your pajamas. You may not have brushed your teeth. But on any other day, you probably don't notice when you brush your teeth. And consequently, it doesn't feel like we're doing much in our efforts toward dental health. Well, the same thing is true when a spiritual community embraces things like One Wake or embraces things like processes that bring about a healthier, more just, and a more equitable world. They become routine, and then they become habituated, and they don't actually feel like they're crushing us. There are things that we can do. Now, if we don't do the work of carefully considering what our routines are, then we just keep doing the things that will take us to a world that we don't want to live in, to a life that we don't want to live. But if we do what I'm talking about today, yes, that's kind of the point. The point is to get to the place where, you know, this is not so hard. This is actually pretty doable. Things right now feel, for so many people, so overwhelming. And to be honest, you can't do much to pull the levers for what's happening in Washington. But we can do a lot in a very sustainable, routine-driven, habit-driven way to change things in Wake County. We can do that. And if you're listening and you're not in Wake County, in your county. So, yeah. Good point, Maria. What else, Gene?
So I was kind of listening to you, believe it or not, and it made me think about the kind of conversations you were talking about and how they're really vital to allow us to step back and see with other eyes, new eyes, and kind of get a bigger, different context.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that just was like, duh.
Yeah. I can't remember if I told this story. No, I think I told it to my son. So it wasn't a story I said publicly. But some of you have been around the church long enough, you remember Jim Amundsen. And Jim Amundsen was a great big burly guy. And he died, I think, probably 10 years ago now. And he and I were spiritual friends, and we would talk a lot about our souls. And, you know, for those of you who knew Jim, he was not a perfect man. He was sometimes a pain in the ass, is what he was. But here's what he wasn't. He wasn't me. He wasn't my brain running my routines and my habits. So when we would talk about our lives, he would he was a spiritual man. He was deeply spiritual, and he was a learned man. He was a good man and a pain in the ass. You can be both. But when he would stand outside of my brain and say things, very often I would hear things that I needed to hear. Because it's just as Gene is saying, we have these thought rut bumping experiences in the context of community. Because we get bumped out of our ruts by one another because we are not in one another's routines. We don't share one another's habits. One of the things that makes racial inequity so tenacious is we have a bunch of shared thought routines, and we all keep reinforcing one another in the way that it's not taking us to a world that we want to live in. And so we listened, especially we listened to authors of color who write to us and tell us this is the way to get bumped out of those thought ruts. But we can do that same thing at a very personal level in the context of community when we simply do our worksheets together. And those who've practiced doing worksheets together don't actually sit down with a piece of paper and do the worksheet. They just talk and get together, and the patterns that they develop with one another go to the place of looking for the thing under the thing under the thing. And so, yes, those conversations, I didn't perhaps emphasize it enough, but thank you, Gina. That's a really important point. What do you think about? Well, what else?
So Angie, who's helping curate all this question stuff, had two thoughts. The first is, it reminds me of the five sources of authority, one being intuition. If you just listen to intuition, you might think you were doing the wrong thing because it doesn't feel natural. But that's where another source of authority, community, comes in, is important. The second thought that goes with that is, how can we be spiritual friends to folks who are clinging tightly to their false selves and are unwilling to be uncomfortable?
So the first one I think I've talked about lots of times, that has to do with, we did a lot of that work when we were rethinking our religion. She's referring to what was once called Wesley's Quadrilateral. Wesley talked about where we go to find authority in our lives. So that's, and it is much more complicated than just going to the Bible and saying, there's the answer book. We look in our history to multiple sources. Let's talk about the second one. What do you do when you're on this journey and other people are not on this journey? And I don't have a very satisfying answer. It's certainly something I've grappled with a lot in my life. So let me answer it at a personal level and then maybe make application to a broader level. So if you've got a thought routine, and you've got a emotional response routine, and that then leads to words and actions routines, it sits together in a construct that is held tightly together in your life. And so let's just imagine a vector that is just moving in this direction. And if you're in a family, or if you're in a community, or if you're in a socioeconomic class or a racial group, if you're in some kind of a setting, we all reinforce for one another going through this process in a way that keeps our thought ruts from having to be challenged. So here it is. Just imagine there's that vector. And let's just say you have a moment like the first story where somebody says something and you think, oh, yeah, I do invest a lot in my work. Or something like Maria shared during our meditation. Oh, yeah, I do notice that I begin to think that I'm never going to be good enough for this. Or, you know, like Christy, you have one of those moments of seeing. What that does for us is it begins to veer us off from, ever so slightly, this construct, this vector that's moving in this direction with all of our people. And then what happens is time. Time goes on, time goes on, time goes on. And as time goes on, that vector begins to move us further and further and further and further and further from this construct that if you are on Facebook and you connect with people that you knew 20 years ago and then you start watching what they put up about their religion or about their politics, you realize, man, those constructs can be very tenacious. I marvel sometimes when I see people that I knew 25 years ago, they're still saying that shit. Are they seriously? They haven't grown past that? Oh my God, yeah. Well, in my own family, when I did this, I begin to recognize it's a lot more painful than just, oh my God, really, that's happening? Because what was happening is I was losing my people. I was losing the community that had supported me and had shaped me and had defined who I was and how the world was. And that was an egregious loss. And so I trust in the power of my words. That's my own personality trait. And so I used plenty of words to try and persuade them, hey, come on this journey with me. And they didn't want to come. And I did a lot of shouting and screaming and yelling and things that if I could have it back, I wouldn't do again this time because it was very ineffective and created a lot of pain. But what I had to come to grips with is my own loss. I am going to lose my people if I keep moving in this direction. And that's a lot of pressure and that's a lot of pain, enough that sometimes we'll jump right back and we'll stay in the group. But if we come to a moment in history like the one that we're living in, we cannot do that. If we decide that we want to be whole people, we cannot do that. If we decide that we want to no longer be carrying around those scripts that are destroying us, we cannot do that. And eventually there comes a place where I lose something that is also precious. I lose my people. Well, when that happens, you can either be nasty about it or you can be compassionate about it, because there was the very real possibility that I didn't experience that moment so long ago in which I took that slight angle difference. And there is a very good chance that I have missed some point of change and I am not where I could have been. And we can be gracious or we can be combative. And the thing is, one is not right and the other wrong. Sometimes we have to be combative because what is being perpetrated is harming other people. Sometimes we can be gracious because what is being held on to isn't harming other people. It's just a stuck point. And goodness sakes, we all have stuck points, don't we? So that is really not much of an answer at all for Angie, because what it's saying is, yeah, I don't know. My ignorance, however, is a very informed by experience ignorance. And I think the answer is what we're going to talk about next week, which is, how does discernment happen? How do you know if this is a moment for raising the alarm or if this is a moment for patience and gentleness? And the answer comes down to discernment. And boy, is that an imperfect art. You know, it's very difficult to get that right. So we'll try our best next week when we talk about discernment. That being said, it's time. If you would, put your hand on your heart and let us remember as we go that we are, every one of us, carriers of the indwelling divine. What we need is within us, courage and strength, even the discernment to know when and when. But it's not always easy to access that, so let's work hard to both access what is within us and to give it as a gift to others. If you would extend your other hand to our city, let's look for opportunities to share what is in us with the people that we live and work and go to school with, looking for opportunities to repair and heal our worlds. Amen. Well, God bless you. We are dismissed. Love one another as you go, which means contact somebody that you saw in the scroll and head on over to the Zoom chat to talk about what else you're thinking about. God bless you. We'll see you. We'll see you next week. If these recordings help you move forward on your spiritual journey, we hope you'll take an ownership stake in the community and support the health and well-being of the community. You can go to our website, commonthreadchurch.org. The donate button is at the top of the page for your computer's browser, at the bottom of the page for your phones.